Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 36, The Renaissance 1. I want to begin our discussion of the Renaissance by looking at it from the broadest possible perspective, that of Rudolf Steiner's spiritual vision of the unfolding of events on the earth. And if this sort of thing interests you, again, you can go a little further and deeper in its antecedents by looking at the Steiner course. But I hope that even if this is not terribly much in your sphere of interest, you'll listen anyway, because I think you'll see the remarkable confluence of events in the spiritual world that had their reflection very much in the no less remarkable confluence of events on the earth. It's the Renaissance, that it occurred, how it occurred, when and where it occurred. It's all sort of, historically speaking, quite a miraculous undertaking, which is perhaps has its equivalent only in the Golden Age of Athens. So let's see what Rudolf Steiner has to say about this, as interpreted by me. These are in his exact words. I want to look at, first of all, what Steiner speaks of as the birth of the consciousness soul. Now, what does this mean? If we look back at the other historical periods that we have covered, let's go back to grade 5, where we looked at ancient history. And we looked at the life, I presume many of you work this way, the life of ancient India, ancient Persia, ancient Babylonia, Chaldea, Mesopotamia, and Egypt. Let's just stop there for the moment. Although those civilizations in those epochs, which stretched over 7,500 to 10,000 years, depending on how you want to compute it, although they had tremendous differences and polarities within them, what they all have in common is that the mass of humanity, the you know, average man and woman of those times, had within them a soul capacity that Rudolf Steiner identifies as the sentient soul. Now, these soul capacities are, to put it one way, divisions in the astral body. They're capacities that develop within the astral body. And these capacities are, by and large, the gift of the spiritual world, that they are like seeds that have been planted in the spiritual world, which will unfold, sprout, bear flowers and fruit in and of themselves in a pretty common way that will be shared by the greater mass of humanity at a particular time. Or to put it another way, much more materialistic way, they're like time capsules that we have ingested long, long ago, but because the spiritual world works in such long, long time periods, we're not even aware that they are there, but certainly they are beginning to dissolve and become part of the fabric of our being at certain predetermined times. So, in this sense, these soul capacities that I'm talking about do have an element of predetermination about them. They are going to come, they have come, and in the future, more will come in a way without our really having to do a lot about it. But once they are there, it's up to us to utilize them, to make something of them, to make them our own, so that they can in turn serve as the springboard for yet much higher capacities of soul and spirit in which we have played a cooperative role. So our next stages of development are taking the gifts that we have been given by the spiritual world, taking them a step or two or three further along. So the sentient soul is the lowest of these transformations of the astral body. And we could say that the sentient soul is very much where the astral body lives in itself. And as the name implies, it has a lot to do with being sentient, with living in one's senses, with having a degree of sensibility, with even encountering sensuousness and sensuality. All of the words beginning in S-E-N or S-E-N-S play into this. And it's not surprising that we could say in third grade, the children learned about the sort of prototypical, archetypical experience of the sentient body in which Adam and Eve realize that they are naked, that the sentient soul is implanted, a kind of seed, as Eve eats of the apple, and awakens on the level of the senses. So before that, Adam and Eve and humanity at large, there weren't too many of them, obviously, at that time, but they were living in a very cosmic picture of one another, that they were clothed, but they were clothed in their higher members, in the veils of their higher bodies. With the coming of the sentient soul, those higher bodies drop away, and we realize that we are naked, or as Noah's daughters realized, that even their father was naked. Something awakens, something is lost. But this experience is one in which the spiritual world still plays into the life of the senses. So that means that in the sentient soul age, as we certainly see from the great cultural artifacts that we have of the Indian epics and Egyptian temples and Persian legends, the spiritual world was still present in one way or another, sometimes more wakefully, sometimes more sleepily, but especially when people dreamt, they were very present, very much in that spiritual world. And the gods lived very much among them and with them, and even like Isis and Osiris ruled them for periods of time. So the life of senses was awakening to what was there in the earth, and we see this in the beauty of the simplest objects that the Egyptians create for their daily life. What beauty is there? And yet people also were living very much in a world of gods and goddesses. These two worlds flowed into one another. We could say that on one level, Joan of Arc's experiences harken back to this early sentient soul consciousness. We see, for example, in the temple paintings in Egypt, how the average Egyptian is depicted vis-a-vis the pharaoh. The pharaoh has a crown, sometimes two crowns. The pharaoh has a beard. The pharaoh has hair. The pharaoh is wearing several layers of garments made of the most beautiful fabrics and the richest stones. What are the common people wearing? They are wearing a loincloth. They're wearing a simple one-piece garment. They are not depicted with hair. They are not wearing jewelry. They are barefoot for the most part. This is not just showing, well, the pharaoh was wealthy and the average man was not, of course, but it's also saying that the sentient soul man had, in a way, lost a lot of the fabric, the veils of the spiritual world, He was, in a way, naked. He saw himself as practically being naked, whereas the Pharaoh was taking on a new relationship to the spiritual world. The higher bodies were manifested in what the Pharaoh wore and how the Pharaoh was presented. So this is the sentient soul age, in which the sentient soul awakened in all humanity. Not at birth, it awakened in the early 20s, in young adulthood. And people then began to have a new relationship with the physical earthly world, though it still was permeated with spirit. And then, remaining in grade 5, we see what a breadth of time we take on in grade 5. With the onset of the Greco-Roman era, with the ancient Greeks, with those who lived in the islands around them, we see the awakening of what Rudolf Steiner speaks of as the Gemütsoul, untranslatable, as we're always told by Steiner's translators, sometimes called the intellectual soul, sometimes called the mind soul, sometimes even the feeling soul. Here, the astral body begins to permeate the etheric body. And now we have the beginning of thinking. Suddenly, one Greek after another acknowledges that he cannot see the gods. I don't see them. They're not there. And they begin to develop theories about how physical matter really came about, of what it is really constituted. These are the pre-Socratic philosophers. They didn't call themselves that because they didn't know Socrates was coming down the pike. They call themselves the physicists. So the study of physics, interestingly, marks the onset of the intellectual soul. And one pre-Socratic says, everything is composed of fire. Another says, no, it's all water. A third says, no, it's air. Yet another says, it's atoms. It can all be broken down into the smallest particulate physical substances. Atoms, Demokrotis said this a long, long time ago. So we see the intellectual soul, in a way, continues to live on. It's very analytical, and it is very focused, completely focused, on what is in the physical world. And we still have the voice of a Pythagoras, of a Plato, reminding us that behind this physical world, there lies an ideal world, a world of spirit that has given forth this world of matter, which is nothing more than a shadow, a poor copy of the world of spirit. Your senses are only giving you part of the picture. You're in a cave looking at shadows, whereas in the light, you'd see what is really there. But nonetheless, for Plato to formulate that, for Pythagoras to formulate that, they had to speak in thoughts. They had to express themselves logically, grammatically. Now even the way in which individuals spoke said something about their relationship to the world of matter and the world of spirit. And finally, with Aristotle, we have an individual who leaves the spirit and focuses completely on one level on what is around us. And the gesture that we will see in Raphael's great painting, The School of Athens, Aristotle stretches out his hand, his arm, into the horizontal realm. So the intellectual soul takes us very much into the horizontality of the world, to look at what is around us, to penetrate it with our thinking, to organize it, to reorganize it, to see its interrelationships, but all very much in the realm of what is around us. So the sentient soul is drawn by the intellectual soul into the world of the senses that are here, something that we are going to transform, transmute, perhaps even spiritualize with the capacities of our thinking. So this is the second phase of consciousness, again, planted within us in long eons before our time, which is now firing on time, so that by the end of the Roman epoch, by the times you were teaching in sixth grade, we could say that the average person now had an intellectual soul. That was part of their legacy. And that was something that awakened round about age 28. So you see these are connected with the seven-year periods. And that was as far as most humanity could go, except for the highly developed individuals and the initiates of that time. Let's go on now and see how things stand at the time of the late Middle Ages.